Hi, welcome to our first session in the series called Game Services. I'm Olivia Closer. I'm a software development engineer at Microsoft, helping global ISVs onboard their solutions on our cloud platform called Azure. And with me, I have a gaming expert called Christopher. Do you want to tell something about yourself?
Hey, I'm Christopher. I also work in the same team as you, a software development engineer, helping game studios develop games that utilize Azure, the cloud, as their backend for the games.
Cool. So in this series, we actually want to help you, or get Azure across for game developers. Why should a game developer bother about Azure at all? And we've got some pretty good content prepared. So I think we should just get started.
Just get in. Cool. So the game industry first. So the game industry is a huge market by now. So it has a revenue of more than $100 billion US dollars per year. And we can see it's just about to take off. So it's just more and more every year. We can see there's a huge tendency right now for mobile gaming. So there's a lot of interest in having games that run on devices like phones and tablets and stuff like that.
So when do you think the whole mobile game industry really started off? And can you speak of your personal experience as well? Because you are a very passionate gamer yourself, I'm guessing.
So I would guess the mobile gaming started basically with Apple releasing iPhone. But ever since, it's just been growing very much. And I'm a passionate gamer. I love to play games. I play a lot of games on the PC console, but also on the phone while flying, for example. So I like Candy Crush a lot and those kind of games, but...
But I thought Candy Crush is not like one of those hardcore games. Like, well, this is something that like an amateur gamer would do, but... Well.
Yeah, but it's a good one to have on the flight. But I also love other games like Hitman. I have a really special interest in Hitman, and I love it. And many kind of games.
Cool. Okay. So we see the game industry is pretty big.
Yes.
You can make a lot of money.
There's a lot of money in the game, so a lot of people want to be there, and games are changing all the time. Because gaming is about having fun. So if the games are not fun, if the games are not adapting to what people think is fun at the moment, no one will buy them, no one will play them, and so they need to adapt. And
And I guess like fun is a very subjective thing as well. I mean, what you call fun might be something like super dull for me as well.
Yeah. So I mentioned one of the games that I like to play on the airplane, but I also play Sudoku quite a lot.
I
love it.
Actually.
It makes me feel old, but I do love it. And but then again, I play other games that are more complicated technically as well. So yes, it's very different what one people think is fun.
So why do you say that games are changing? Do you mean the concept of fun in games are changing or?
I think both. So if you think about like when we played games before, like ages ago, people were really happy if they had one little dot passing back and forth from two bars on the side, like the Atari classic game.
In the good old days.
Yes. Yeah. And people wouldn't be as satisfied playing Snake today on their iPhones or Android devices or Windows phones, whatever. So people think that games should be more advanced by now. They also think that a game should have you should be sport to do more things over and over times in some way. So they are changing both technically, but also the way they interact with you as a player.
So yeah, I'm guessing expectations in general in terms of interface, strategy, games, and so on are rising with
yes.
times.
So absolutely. And what we can see is there is a tendency now that all games, or more and more, if not all games, they will be connected to some kind of backend. So there's going to be some kind of communication going on from your device, unless you are disconnected at the moment, like playing Sudoku on a plane or whatever. But otherwise, you will be connected to some kind of device, some kind of service that might collect information or might transmit information to one of your colleagues or one of your player friends that you're playing with. There might be a high score list, there might be in-app purchases and stuff like that. So all games are in some way connected nowadays. And there's So I mentioned a few of them. So multiplayer, if you have want to have multiplayer functionality in your game, then you need to be connected to something, at least to one other player, unless you're playing multiplayer on the same device. Quite often you think that if you play your game on one device and you get on the bus and then you want to continue playing on the bus, you need to have some way of synchronizing the state of your game, so save the state so you can resume later on. There are other things like analytics, and it's becoming more and more important to understand what the gamer actually think is fun. We talked about it this moment, so you might not think the same thing is fun as I do. But by doing that player analytics, we can figure out what you think is fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what you mean by connected is pretty much you want to be connected to a lot of other players if you want to play a multiplayer game, or the other way is like to have the smooth experience across many devices, like start off on your PC with a game and then carry on your, I don't know, on your phone when you're on your way to work in a train or something.
Yeah, I think it could be both. So it's all of these things, so yes. And we can see this is a typical usage curve of a traditional game. So you have the game, you're about to release a game, you might have an closed alpha or something, you only have your friends and family playing the game in the beginning. Hopefully you get a lot of hype about your game and you will soon have a beta. You invite people to play the game for a while to test it out. Perhaps it's a closed beta, only a few people, but then the release comes and hopefully you have that hype. So a lot of people download your game and start playing it. And after a while, if the game isn't fun, people will drop off. And this is really, of course, this is important for you as a game studio to, in order to make money. But it's also important when you think about how to design a backend for that kind of game that has this kind of usage curve.
Yeah, I think this curve really shows that you have to have everything like correctly in place, or have to do everything in the right way at the moment that you're releasing your game. Otherwise, that moment or that momentum is pretty much past, and you're never going to have as many players as on the day of the release.
Yeah, and it's like a TV series. Everyone wants to watch the TV series, right at that moment when the new episode is released, and that's the same with the games. And there's been a bunch of games that has been released where the backend has not been coping up with the demand. So it's a hard problem to solve, but you need to know that this is going to happen. But
so does it mean, like with that curve, I should, as a game developer, just always keep on developing new games, and that's it? So it sounds like I don't have to bother about maintaining a game at all, because there's no point. I'm never going to reach the same user base. It's just going to like go flat
out. Yeah. So yeah, of course that would be one strategy. To do those kind of games that you release, have some revenue from them, and then keep going with a new game. Another one would be instead to try to create a game that is more of a service game, where you keep coming with updates. So you keep adding new stuff to your game. It might be new levels, it might be new content, it might be completely new things in the game that you have not seen before. And we can see that the games that have that functionality, that are connected in some way or updated regularly, will keep the user base for a longer period of time, and hopefully that will increase your revenue.
I see. So yeah, I can imagine. So this really much looks like if you have a TV series and then publish an episode every week. This is sort of the regularity that you would like to have in games as well.
Very much so. And we've seen some other games that have gone this path, and they've actually observe this exact curve, and Hitman is one of them, now being released as a season. So there's seasonal content coming every once in a while, and so new episodes coming out throughout the season. And it's been huge success for that game.
I think it's done very similarly with The Walking Dead as well, especially because it's very much linked to this TV series, The Walking Dead.
True. So updates make sense. So you want to have them, and you want to be able to do them fast as you can. So sometimes there's a bug that you need to fix, and if that bug can be fixed from the server side, you can fix it and ship it in seconds. If that bug is on the client side, you might have to go through a certification process on the device where you want to deploy your game to, and it could take from everything up to hours to several weeks in some time. And So it makes sense to have as much logic as you can on the server side, so you can control when you want to update it, and you can push out new features as you want to. And hopefully that'll make your players have more fun and keep playing your game.
To exactly have the curve that we've seen beforehand, yeah.
Yes. And if you think about that curve that we saw, that really huge spike in the beginning, and then it flattens out. So what if you were to, if you would have to buy hardware to have such a service running for yourself, you would have to predict how high that curve would be, and then you would sit there with a bunch of servers that you don't need for the rest of the curve.
Yeah.
So you would then have to develop a new game that would flatten out the overall curve, or you could use the cloud. And that's basically what the cloud is for. And it will allow you to only pay for what you use. It will allow you to scale as demand comes and goes.
Yeah, that makes sense. So these are the reasons why a game developer should bother with the cloud at all. And since we are here from Microsoft, we obviously would be talking about our cloud platform. So let's dig more into what Azure can actually provide to a game developer.
Yes.
And you've been involved in quite a few game customer cases already. And there is one video that we would like to show you, which Christopher was involved in himself as well.
So let's have a look at how the developers at IO Interactive in Denmark has to say about this.
I'm Christian Corsano. I'm the lead online programmer here at IO Interactive in Copenhagen. Hitman is about Agent 47. He's a world deadliest assassin, so you know him as being the bald guy with a red tie in a suit. What is great about Azure is that we no longer have to worry about the platform. It lets us do what we love to do, making great games. Moving forward, something we want to look at is all the data we are collecting from our running service and how we could use that to leverage user experience through machine learning, for instance. And Azure has a solution for that.
My name's Torben Ert. I'm the lead online designer at IO Interactive, working on Hitman. It's such a fantastic match for the way Hitman works. And one of those technology choices was obviously working together with Microsoft, with the Azure platform as a service. This is a game where you can spend hundreds of hours on a level, achieving perfection in the art of assassination. And the way we've built it as a serviced game, released episodically, just allows us to do that. So I would totally do it again. So future plans. I'd love to tell you, but then someone would kill me.
Cool, so we've seen one example how one gaming studio is using Azure, and here are many of other gaming studios that have leveraged our cloud platform. Maybe you want to talk a little about this one.
So we have a few other ones that we want to mention here as well. So we just saw Hitman and how they utilize how they utilize Azure to bring a serviced game to the players. But Halo would be another type of game. So while Hitman is a single player game, but it's a connected single player game, Halo is really much about the multiplayer experience. So you will play together with your friends at the same time, trying to kill each other. I know it's a bad thing, but it's a fun game.
I see. Okay.
And then another game would be, and also I want to say about Halo, it's very much what we call a session-based multiplayer game. So you try to find a session that you join and then you play together with them, with those friends that are in the same session, or frenemies or whatever you call them. While another type of game would be the more MMO kind of game, so massively multiplayer online games.
Yeah.
And Age of Descent is one of those that are trying to achieve a gameplay where you all play together. No matter when you join, there's not going to be one session that you join. You're going to be there joining the game, playing the game in the universe that exists all the time. So Age of Descent would be one of them. And then you have the more mobile kind of social game or playing as you go kind of game that are growing really fast. And we have the title here, Walking Dead No Man's Land from the Finnish studio. And it's an example of how you can utilize the cloud for things like leaderboards and stuff like that. So it's played on your device, but still connected to the cloud.
And I'm guessing later on we will be talking about certain architecture patterns that you've noticed when working with all those different gaming studios.
Absolutely.
And have you played all of those games as well?
I have.
So tried and tested, approved.
Yes. So let's continue. So let's dig into Azure. So
first we're going to first look at what Azure is in general and highlight some of the very good advantages of Azure for a gaming developer, I'm guessing.
Yes. So what is Azure? So Azure is basically not your own computers. It's someone else's computers, but it's still computers in some place. And instead of buying them yourself, you basically rent the resources you need when you need them. So Azure is a huge bunch of machines around the world that host a lot of features, services that you can utilize whenever you want them, and kind of makes a match like a, people often refer to it as a Chinese menu. You pick your meals and then you compose a good dinner.
A Chinese menu?
Okay. Oh, well.
This is the first time I've ever heard of this
You haven't
one.
Heard it? No? But okay. But
okay, so this is our Chinese menu of Azure.
Yes.
With a lot of features that we can utilize.
Yeah. So if you want to have like the virtual machines, you want to have compute resources, we have that in Azure. As there's a lot of flavors to computer resources, but you can have the virtual machines, so you can run everything you want yourself, or you can have it more of a platform as a service, and you just tell us what kind of code you want to run. If you need to store stuff, we have those kind of services as well in Azure. And anything from storing binary objects like images or downloadable content to your game, or more structured content that would fit better in a database kind of storage, we have that. If you want to capture those events, what's happening in the game, we have analytics solutions as well. So we can capture those events coming from millions of continuously playing players and then do great analysis on top of that. So let's dig into some of these areas that we quite often come across when it comes to gaming. So compute.
So makes sense.
So you need some kind of, so if your game needs some kind of decision making on the server side, so it could be evaluating if someone is playing correctly or not. It could be evaluating whether you have achieved some high score, or perhaps there's some kind of achievement that you have achieved. So you need compute in some way. Azure has many of those, as I said, but virtual machines would be one. And basically, it's a machine that you spin up, you control yourself, you put whatever operating system you want on it, but you also have to take care of it. If you need more than one, you would need to add more virtual machines.
So this is the way of having pretty much most control over.
Yes.
Because you still have to maintain all those VMs.
Yeah, and we quite often refer to that as IaaS, so Infrastructure as a Service. So it would be your infrastructure, you take care of it, but we will make sure it works. The infrastructure works. You can get some help in Azure if you want to. So if you want to have the same machine repeatedly spun up, you could use what's called a virtual machine scale sets. So you basically tell us how one machine looks, and then you say, I want hundreds of those, and we will spin up hundreds of them. Mm-hmm. If you'd rather go with a more of a containerized deployment solution, we have the Azure Container Services. It would allow you to deploy whatever thing you normally deploy with a container-based deployment into Azure. And we will take care of the container for you and run it. The container services is a very open source, so we support many of the known open source solutions out there. So it's up to you to choose. Or if you want to have an even more platform approach, we have what's called Azure Service Fabric. We're going to talk some more about that later, but it allows you to create your game services in another way. So use another kind of architecture. If you like to step one step back even further, we have even more platform services like the web apps that are available in Azure. It allows you to just deploy your code and don't even care about any kind of virtual machines and stuff.
So you don't have to worry about maintaining.
No, so we will patch the operating system for you. You just tell that this is a Python web app that should run somewhere. We host it for you. We make sure it works. If you want to scale out, it's going to be super fast. It's going to be within seconds that we can add more resources to your farm.
So do you notice that a lot of game studios rather go for the IaaS approach or usually for the PaaS approach, the platform as a service?
Yeah, so it's going to be, it's pretty much both. Mm. So if you develop something from the beginning, many studios want to go with a platform approach, unless they have a very good knowledge or already in something like, so perhaps a lot of their developers already know about containerized deployment. So perhaps they want to do that in Azure as well. There might be some game scenarios that doesn't really fit well within a platform as a service scenario. Yeah. So you might need to have, perhaps you have bought some kind of game service, a game engine that you want to host somewhere, and perhaps the infrastructure approach would be better then.
I see. So the answer usually is whatever the customer wants to have or is really most comfortable with, this is what Azure would provide.
That's very much what Azure would provide.
Yeah. Okay.
And we have the serverless approach as well, so we call it Azure Functions. So if you don't want to care about servers at all, you don't want to see them, we have that. And all of these approaches could scale automatically. Some of them require you to tell us when to scale. Otherwise, well, we would scale some of them for you, but you can always tell us when you need them to scale and we will do it for you.
Cool.
Another scenario we quite often see is the data scenario. So you have some kind of data that you need to store in the cloud by some reason. We already mentioned a few, like the game state, like your save games. You want to implement some kind of a cloud save solution in your game. Or it might be the leaderboard. It might be something else. And there's a lot of different services in there. Of course, the first one would always be for you to just host a VM. Install whatever software you want on there.
Yep.
Could be MySQL, could be any kind of database that you are used to. But we have services like Blob Storage, SQL Database. SQL Database is like SQL Server, but as a service, you don't. We have a NoSQL database called DocumentDB that allows you to store JSON objects very easily and query them. We have Redis as a service, so if you want the really fast in-memory cache, then we have that as a service. We have many more, like Data Lake, and there's a bunch of other ones that we're going to dig into deeper later on.
So if I were a gaming studio and have already used a NoSQL database such as MongoDB, can I still use MongoDB on Azure, or would I have to go for DocumentDB?
Yeah, it's a good question. And you could definitely keep using MongoDB if you wanted to. So you can just install MongoDB in your own virtual machine and run them as is. So you don't have to change anything. Just that example with MongoDB would be a good example where DocumentDB also have support for the same protocol as MongoDB. So if you try it out, it might just work out of the box. You just switch the connection string, and instead of using your MongoDB server, you point it towards the DocumentDB service in Azure, and it might work.
Okay.
It's really awesome, by the way. And then we have the whole analytics part, and I know you're going to have another session about it, but there's a bunch of services that could help you provide insight into what's happening in your game, both what's happening right now, what's going to happen in the future, or what has happened in the past.
Yeah. And I guess like the whole point of doing analytics is to measure what actually is fun or perceived as fun by all our players from the game.
Very much like that. And understanding what people want to buy or what feature looks good. So you can have A/B testing and figure out, so is this a good feature or not? Will people buy more swords or not if we have them at $1 or $2? So we already mentioned some of it, but Azure is very open, so we don't want to, like, Azure is not Azure.net. It's not the Microsoft cloud only. It's not the only tools that you need. The only tools you can use is not just the Microsoft tools. You can use the tools that you're used to, tools that you want to use, and we would gladly accept them. Quite a high percentage of the services that run on Azure runs on Linux right now. Even our own services, some of them runs on Linux.
So I think there was a number, like 25% of the workloads on Azure are actually Linux workloads.
Yeah, I've heard similar numbers. So yes, so it's quite high. And it's quite amazing if you consider we are Microsoft.
Yeah.
So we love it. We love Linux. We love Windows. We love everything. We also love any type of games. It doesn't matter if it's a multiplayer, massively online player, like the super big ones. It could also be the very small ones, the one that you're creating in your basement at home at night. Those could also fit in Azure because you only pay for what you use. So if you're a very small indie company developing your own game, you would only have a very small bill or not even a bill at all. While if you're a bigger customer, you would have the resources you need when you need them. So we are there for mobile, we are there for online, like social games that are connected to Facebook or any other kind of social network. We could be there for PC game or console games, even console games that you might not associate with Microsoft. So it's not only Xbox, but the other consoles would definitely work with Azure as well. And they are. We have huge set of tools. So no matter what kind of option you choose, we have tools for them. So I'm going to show you soon, but we have tools that will work on Macs or Linux, and you can pick. And many of our software development kits, SDKs, are available in many languages. So it's not like C# only. It's C++, Python, Go, anything like that.
Yeah, which kind of reminds me of one little anecdote. One thing that we didn't know is in Portugal, most game developers don't use MacBooks.
Yeah.
Which was kind of funny because we wanted to make it a point of using MacBooks, and we ended up being the only ones having a MacBook in front of a crowd that is only using Windows
PCs. So it's different. So know your audience, yes, but we learn as well.
Yeah.
But we wanted to make the point that it does work. You don't have to be like the Microsoft guy to use Azure. You can be anyone.
But yeah, so the whole point of having such a broad selection of tools is to make sure that as a developer, you can still stay in your environment or in the environment that you're most comfortable with and have the smooth transition to actually scale out to the cloud here in Azure.
And of course, there are tooling for a lot of programming languages available for Azure, and some of them are better than others. And I would say that the C# one is probably obviously very well developed, and it could make sense for you as a game developer because many game developers use Unity, and we know that Unity is very popular to use C# within Unity. It could be beneficial for you to use C# in the client, but also on the server side if you wanted to, and we have very good support for that.
Cool.
But no, we don't want to push C# in Azure only. It's anything you want.
It's one of the many options.
Yes. So when you develop a game, and especially if you develop a game that needs some kind of service, it's very important that with latency. Quite often it's important. It's not all kind of games. So if you play Sudoku, it doesn't really have to be low latency kind of gaming.
Well, you never know.
It could be like the next thing, right? A multiplayer version of Sudoku would be awesome.
That would be interesting.
The first one that does that, I will download that game. But quite often, latency to the servers are important when it comes to gaming.
So I guess best example would be Halo.
Halo would be one of those. So yeah. So if you are like a couple of milliseconds behind someone else, you will be dead before them. So you need to have low latency to your users. And that's also why these kind of games like Halo and the session-based games are session-based. Because it wouldn't be fair to have someone compete. If the servers are in Europe and you would have someone in South Africa trying to compete with someone sitting next to the servers in Europe, it wouldn't make it a fair game. So you would have different kind of servers for different kind of people. So we currently have 32 regions that we have open right now, and we have announced plans for another 6. So they are available all over the world like this. But that number of regions are changing all the time.
Mm.
So what if you really want to know where they are? Like, I want to know right now where I can deploy my services to. So how would you do that? So I'm going to show you a demo of that.
Okay, perfect, finally.
Finally some code, or at least console. So this is a demo that's going to use a tool that we call the Azure Command Line Interface, so Azure CLI. So if you want to download that one, you can just browse for it and search for it on any browser, and you will find it. You can also install it if you have Node on your computer.
Okay, so. And I guess the nice thing about Azure CLI is it's not just for Windows-based PCs. You can use it on the MacBook or any sort of operating system.
Yeah, so exactly. So it's developed using Node, so that is JavaScript on the that is JavaScript. And if you wanted to install it, you can just do npm install globally, and then you do Azure CLI, and it would download and install the Azure CLI. Once you have done that, you need to connect it to your account. So you can just make sure it works by writing Azure, and you would see the command line interface showing you the commands that you can run, and you would do the Azure login. And that would allow you to log into your account in Azure. So in order to do this kind of demo that I'm going to do now, you need to have signed up for an Azure account first.
Okay. And you want to show in this demo how many regions you can actually deploy your services to.
Yeah, so right now, if I want to deploy right now, where can I deploy them to? And there's a command that I can do that is Azure location, and if I'm uncertain what to do, I just press enter. It will give me some more information. It will say that there's an option to say list, so I can do Azure location list, and that would give me a list of locations where I am allowed to deploy to.
Super readable as well.
It's not that readable, so you can't really see what's in there. There's another good feature within the Azure CLI that helps you there. So if you do instead the Azure location list and you do dash dash JSON, it will give the result back as JSON.
Okay.
And that makes it possible for you to do things like, and now I'm going to use some of the partial stuff. So I'm just going to find it. There we go. So if I do Azure location list as JSON and then I say convert from JSON and then format that as a table and pick the name, latitude and longitude.
So now you've done like a mixture of Azure CLI and PowerShell within one line.
Yes. So so that one would work on a Mac if you install a PowerShell that is now open source and works on Linux as well. So basically, these are the locations the regions where I'm allowed to deploy to with my account.
So hang on, you said like how many regions are there? How many Azure regions are there actually, and how many regions can you actually deploy to?
So there would be 32 right now. Okay. So if I were to do this and measure object, you would see that I only have a list of 28. So the count is 28 there.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is that some of these regions that are available is not available for me, for my account right now.
Because it's you, Christopher? Or
yeah, because I'm restricted now. But in some way it is. So some of the regions we have are dedicated to like government. So U.S. government or U.S. military or something like that.
I see.
And there could also be other reasons why you would not be able to deploy to a region. And that could be tax or any kind of restrictions that has to do with the region where the data center is located. But as of right now, I could deploy to 28 different locations.
Nice.
Cool.
So the first taste of Azure CLI is always fun.
So we can reach the developers wherever they are. We can reach them at our 32 regions, and that will give you the low latency that you need for your game. But also, it's important to understand that those regions would help you implement things like replication and reliable services. So if one of those regions would fail, and it doesn't need to be Azure's fault, it could be other reasons why a service would fail. It could be DNS services that go down, whatever. But we have the ability to put your service in many places, so it will be up and running. So another reason to use Azure, another reason.
Just one thing. Yep. So just to recap, we've done what is Azure, and then we've covered two main reasons, like Azure is open and global reach.
Yes.
And this is now the third major. I mean, obviously, there are many advantages of using Azure. We are just focusing on three here in this session.
So we're going to focus on,
Okay, well, and this is now the third one, the reliability.
Yeah, so reliability and scale is this one. So you saw the usage curve in the beginning, and you might hopefully have that huge spike in the beginning. So you have built up this hype about this game, and hopefully you will build a game that is good enough to manage with, to cope with that spike of users coming.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a fun game when they buy the game or download the game. So you need to scale, and you need to scale fast. Or you need to be prepared for it at least. But if you can scale on demand, it's quite often better because it allows you to save money.
Yeah.
And money is going to be important. If we are talking about like thousands of machines or thousands of servers, only having them up and running a few hours too long would cost you some money. So you want to scale as late as possible, and you want to scale down as soon as possible.
So actually just scaling at the right time.
Scaling at the right time, yes. So try to follow the curve, the usage curve, as much as you can. But it's hard to predict that usage. So what you want to do then is to make sure you automate it. You want to make sure that whenever I feel that there's need for another server, and in some ways, it could be easy. So if you have a game that only allows you to play with 32 players per server, and server would only fit, there's only going to be 32 players in one server, you kind of know that I need another one because I have more than 32 players.
Yeah.
But in some other places, you might measure instead throughput. Like I want to understand the time it takes for that message to come in and the time it takes for until it's processed and come out, and you will scale on that instead. So the more of the queue or something else. But it's up to you, and you can definitely do it in Azure. Some of those things are just as easy as saying, hey, if the CPU goes above 50 or 60%, then add another server and we will do it for you.
Okay.
So by having the cloud there for you, you will hopefully absorb those huge spikes that you will have on your really successful game. So it's going to be awesome.
With my millions of players.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that Sudoku million, MMO Sudoku coming up soon. And basically we can scale for you, like in seconds we can go from one server to hundreds of servers if you want to. If you want to have more control and spin up your machines for yourself, it might take 1 or 2 minutes before the machine starts. But there are services, there are things you can do to make it really fast.
Okay. So now that it says game service architectures, we are going to go through some like typical patterns that Christopher has encountered when working together with game studios and scaling their solutions or gaming scaling their games in Azure. So shall we get started?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we come across a few of these architecture every time we go speak with a game studio, and I'm going to show you a few of them. And we have on the left side on the picture here. So here we have some kind of game client.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what kind of game that is, but it
doesn't look like Sudoku.
It's not a Sudoku game. It looks like bouncing a ball on bricks or whatever kind of game. But it might need some kind of back end that will help you save the high score. Or perhaps you want to download some kind of content once in a while. So the game could then connect to some kind of REST API, perhaps. It could be a REST API. It could be something else. You would then host that REST API behind a load balancer in order to scale. So if you have that huge spike, you need to have load balancing. And you would save state in some kind of storage behind the scene. In Azure, you would implement that as functions, perhaps. If you don't want to take care of the service at all, you can just say, hey, I want to host a REST API, and I want to do it that in this new popular serverless approach. So Azure Function would be that. If you rather have some demand, if you rather have some control of the servers, you could use web apps instead.
So what would you have control over in Azure Web App, where you wouldn't have control over the Azure Function?
So perhaps I took it too far there, but in Azure Functions, if you want to, you can set up Azure Functions to only to not even care at all about the servers they're running on. So you would only pay for your functions whenever they are fired. And
okay.
There's going to be a trigger in the function that something will trigger the function to run, and it might be an HTTP call coming in from the game client. While if you use a web app, you would have some kind of resource waiting for incoming traffic, and you would run something on top of it.
I see.
So you would have, there's going to be a concept of a web farm that kind of host your web app if you use the web apps.
I see, okay.
It's still going to be a platform service, so you don't have to take care of the underlying operating system. We do that for you, and it's going to scale really fast. So going from one or three machines up to hundreds or tens or whatever, it's going to be seconds. It's not. We already have those machines up and running, waiting for you to ask for them. So functions, web apps, but you could also go with VMs. But if you go with VMs, you would also have to instruct us to put that load balancer in front of it, unless you use the VM scale sets. That would automatically set up the load balancer. But there's a lot of options there, so it depends on what kind of freedom you want or how much help you want from us or the platform. And the same with this, with the storage part. So if you want to, you could use Redis to save everything in memory, have it, Redis replicate across many machines so you won't lose any data if some of the servers go down. You could use a document DB server, and that would
the
be
NoSQL.
The NoSQL one.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much what the guys over in Finland did with the Walking Dead game, so they used it for high scores and stuff. But we have many leaderboards that have been set up in Azure with this kind of REST API and Redis behind the scene, so in memory instead. Or you might use SQL or any other storage. It's up to you. Another solution would be to try to approach this at a different angle at all. So we have another service in Azure. It's actually available as part of Windows. It's actually available on Linux as well now. And it's called a Service Fabric.
Okay.
So Service Fabric would allow you to put your code on this platform that we call Service Fabric in a different way. You could still host web web APIs or any kind of a RESTful API in there if you wanted to. You could put other things as well. So the yellow markers on this map here would indicate the REST API that I had in the previous picture. But then the red ones would be, if you wanted to, you could use what's called an actor-based framework inside Service Fabric. So you could have your users perhaps be implemented as actors inside this Service Fabric. And we would take care of understanding where is your actor located and where is the data located that is relevant to that actor.
Okay. So hang on. These two architectures are pretty much two options for implementing the same scenario.
Could be the same thing, yes. So if you have the same client, would fulfill the same purpose. Could potentially do.
Okay. And why would one choose, or when should a game developer go for architecture number two as opposed to architecture number one?
So the differences here, if you want to use Service Fabric, is quite a different architecture. It's a different way of approaching the problem. So if you can, if you're starting from scratch, if you have the ability to do that, and you can model your problem in an actor-based way, then perhaps using Service Fabric could be a really awesome way to implement your solution. It kind of depends. It will scale really well and will be really fast, and it's the way that some games have done now.
Can you name a couple of games
that have used
Service Fabric?
So, for example, Age of Ascent is one of them that are using Service Fabric, but there are more of them. Halo has been, there's a use case about Halo, but Halo uses another actor-based framework, at least in that one, that's called Orleans.
Okay.
So Orleans is another approach that you could take if you want to have an actor-based solution in Azure, for example.
Okay, so we have Service Fabric and Project Orleans.
Yes.
When and both are actor-based frameworks.
So you could, yes. So the answer is more difficult than to just say yes. So Service Fabric has one part of Service Fabric would allow you to build actor-based solutions, while Project Orleans is an open source solution right now. It's available on GitHub.
Mm-hmm.
It allows you to only build actor-based solutions. Service Fabric also allows you to host those things.
I see.
Service Fabric also allows you to build what's called reliable services. If you still want to build those stateless services, or you want to build stateful services without using the actor-based framework, you could still use Service Fabric. So Service Fabric is somewhat more than Orleans is.
Okay.
So in one way, you could say that you could potentially host Orleans inside Service Fabric if you wanted to. I'm not sure I would recommend it, but you could do so.
Okay, I see. So, but then coming back to the original question, when one should go for Service Fabric as opposed to, let's say, web apps, is can one say that if you're starting off from scratch as a game developer, Service Fabric would be like the easier solution?
I don't think it's going to be the easiest one, and I don't think there's going to be a really clean answer to when. It depends. If you are very knowledgeable, if you're already running something in Service Fabric, you already have a Service Fabric cluster, then going with Service Fabric makes much more sense. If you want to, and if you can model the problem with an actor-based approach, then Service Fabric could be an awesome solution. If you already have a solution that runs with a web tier and a data tier behind, perhaps just using that one would make most sense at the time.
Yeah.
So it kind of depends
on what you've already have and
what you have, what knowledge you have, and how you want to approach the problem.
Okay.
Another solution that we see is this kind of games where you compete against each other. So it's a session-based multiplayer game. So where the game clients need to be connected to some kind of resource, and hopefully, well, most often the same server actually, in order to transmit information from one client to another one really fast.
Can you give an example which game has implemented such an architecture?
So that would be games like Halo or any kind of session-based multiplayer game.
Yeah. Okay.
Would be like this. So quite often you see there's some kind of master service that will take care of your game will connect to the master servers or services first to figure out where I'm supposed to play. So like, I'm Christopher, I want to play with someone that is equally good as me. Can you please team me up with a few of them? After a while, you might get a response back to say, hey, your game session is ready at an IP location, an IP address, and you will connect to that one. And that's where your game server will run. Quite often, this is the way it is if you have bought a game engine. So you're running perhaps Unreal, or you're running Photon, or something like that, and you already have some kind of pre-made engine for you,
I see.
And you want to host it. This is the architecture that quite often comes up then.
I see. I quite like your artistic pictures.
Yeah.
What are those game clients actually supposed to be?
So it's not mosquitoes. It's supposed to be tanks competing to each other there. But it could be anything. Thanks. And then we have the other scenario where you have the game sending telemetry to the cloud to figure out what people are doing, where they're clicking, did they get seen by a camera in the game, or things like that. How are people having problem playing this level?
Yeah.
So these kind of telemetry could be sent to the server, and it's something we're going to talk later about in another session as well. But we do have those services, and we do have those capabilities. The Event Hub would be an awesome service to catch those incoming events, and Stream Analytics would be another one service that would work with those events to figure out what's happening right now. And you can compose a pipeline of analytics services. And of course, you will find that your game would need something like a combination of all of these. So your game might need a multiplayer part, it might need some analytics, it might need a high score. So combining all of these together would be an awesome solution.
So it's pretty much just mix and match according to what you really want to use anyways.
Yes. So this would be one of those scenarios. But we haven't really showed you any yet, like how do you actually deploy? If you want to deploy something to Azure, how do you do it? So I want to show you.
Because in the first demo, you've only shown like where you can deploy certain things.
Yes.
And OK, let's deploy something.
Yeah. So this is the way the portal will look like if you log on to the portal yourself and you want to figure out, like, I want to do something in Azure. In order to get here, you need to go to azure.com and sign up for an account. And you can do that and have a trial account for, I think it's a month or two,
yep,
for free.
A month.
This is what you get when you log in. Depending on, you can customize this one so it can be different colors and you can have different things on the front page here, but this is what you get.
Your favorite color seems to be black?
I kind of like the dark thing. It makes me look younger, I think.
Sure.
You go in there and you say, hey, I want to figure out how to deploy something computer related, perhaps a Windows Server or Red Hat or whatever. You can click through here and then you deploy eventually whenever you have answered those questions.
So it means everything through the GUI, always clicking.
Yeah, that would be one option. And quite often a good solution if you want to do it, like try out something. I just want to see how it looks like if I have a VM running in Azure. It makes sense to try it here. But yeah, then you want to have a better solution. You want to automate this. And we could fall back to the Azure CLI that I showed before. So there's going to be commands here that will help you deploy things like if I want to deploy CDN solutions or Service Fabric or anything like that, I can issue I could type a few commands to set up my architecture. But then we saw these architecture are a combination of many services, and there's a better way to do that. So if you want to, you can create what's called an ARM template, and ARM stands for Azure Resource Manager, and that's the API, the new current API that we're using in Azure.
Okay.
So this template would then describe your architecture and what you intend to do in Azure, and it will help you deploy that. So I'm starting here with a totally empty template inside Visual Studio. I have installed the tools for Azure Resource Manager inside Visual Studio.
That one is just a package that you have to...
Yeah, so it's like an extension to Visual Studio. You download it and it makes you... Yeah, it allows you to do this. So it comes with the Azure SDK, actually. So I can just right-click here to get some help. But on the right here, I want you to see that this is a JSON file. But if I right-click here on resources and say I want to add a new resource, perhaps I want to have this web API that I want to host in Azure with a DocumentDB database or a SQL database or something behind.
Okay.
I would go here and say I want to have something related to web. So I want to have a web app. I give it a name. So it could be the game web. And it asks me for a service plan or a server farm. So I need some kind of compute resource to host my web app here. And I can create a new one here. So I will create that. So game farm, I'm going to call it. So add the game farm. So now I'm saying that I want to have a game web that's going to be my web app. And it's going to be hosted on top of the game farm. That's the servers that's going to host that. And I click add. So Visual Studio will then help me fill out this template for me. So what was once just a super simple JSON file will now become longer. But you will see up here, there's a few parameters, like for game farm name, there's a game farm SKU, and things like that I got help filling out. And now I can add more things. I can go in here and say, I want another database, for example. So I can say, I want to have a SQL database, perhaps. I can just give it game SQL. I want to have a server. I need a new server, apparently, to have my database on top of. So I will call this one the game database server. And
so it's a very convenient way of adding all the resources to that JSON template.
It is.
So a very cool wizard. Mm.
And now I have created my template. So if I want to deploy this one, I could just say to Visual Studio, hey, deploy whatever I have here, right click, and say deploy. And I deploy it. And since I have connected my Visual Studio subscription, since I have connected Visual Studio with my Azure subscription, it will ask me where to deploy to. If everything works, it will ask me for my subscription, and then it would say, hey, do you want to deploy this one to your subscription? And there's some parameters that you need to answer before we deploy, like what's your web app going to be named, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
If you don't want to do this in this way, if you don't want to use Visual Studio to create your JSON file like that, you could instead go to GitHub and have a look. So on github.com/Azure/, let me do like this, Azure Quicks. If you search for Quick Start Templates on Azure, you will find them. No, sorry. I want to go there, to GitHub directly. So this is a GitHub repository that we have. It's open for pull requests. So if you have a really awesome template that you want to provide in there, you can create a pull request, and we will see if it fits within our standards, and we will have it there. This one gives you a very easy way to figure out how do I deploy stuff on Azure using templates like this. So for example, if we go and figure out how do I deploy a Linux machine on mm-hmm. Azure, I can just search for Linux and see if there's a one that fits me. There's going to be one called 101 VM Simple Linux Machine. If I go in there, I will find the files that I need, and there's going to be the Azure deploy.json file. And this file will describe all the things that's needed inside a template in order to deploy a virtual machine that runs Linux. If I want to have more of an overview of that one, I can click on the Visualize button, and it will open up another tool that we have called ArmWiz. And the ArmWiz will visualize the template. Let's see if it wakes up. I thought it would actually show something else. It will visualize the different parts within the template, and it will show what dependencies there are between them. So in the template, there are dependencies. So if we scroll down in the JSON file, you will have a dependency here, for example, the network interface on the machine.
Yeah.
Before I can deploy a network, I would need to have the IP address for that network card, and I need to have some kind of virtual network to connect my card to. And all of that is included inside this template file.
So the template is a convenient way of actually deploying a complete architecture. You don't actually have to go through all those steps yourself manually, set up an Azure SQL database, set up event up, and so on and so forth. You can do this with just like, okay, now deploy architecture number two.
Yes.
And then it's done within a few minutes.
And it's an awesome way to do it if you have an automated build. So you want to have, anytime your developers check in your code, you want to automatically deploy that one to Azure. Since Azure is Azure and you don't have to scale everything for huge, so it's very easy to set up a dev environment in Azure using this, for example, by invoking this template from your build server. If you find a template here on this repository that you like, you can just click on the Deploy to Azure button. It will bring you back into your subscription, and it will pull down the template from GitHub in this case, and it will allow you to answer all those questions or the few questions that were in this template. And things like it asks me for my subscription to deploy to a resource group, and the resource group in Azure is something that contains a lot of other resources. So I can create a new one. So this one will be called Game Services. And I want to deploy this one to West US. I give it a username. I use my gaming tag for that, a password, and a DNS label prefix. That would be the way I would find this machine. So call it 123. And I want to run Ubuntu, the latest version there. Sounds good. And I do accept that I'm deploying a template here. And the template might contain information that I might contain code or things that I need to be aware of.
And when you actually author a template, I'm guessing you can also set which parameters you as a user then can actually set.
Yes.
So like, oh, I want to call the VM in a different, in a specific way, and so on and so forth.
Yes. So the parameters I were asked to provide here was just the parameters that was part of this Linux template that I downloaded from GitHub now. But it's up to you. So you can create a template that has no parameters at all, or you can create a template that has usual template, a huge amount of parameters. Mm. So depending on what you want to do.
And I'm guessing those templates are not necessarily just relevant for gaming developers. It's applicable in any sort of scenario. But now here back to gaming services, this is how you can bundle certain services in one go and then sort of keep or just move provide it to other gaming studios too if they want to use it.
Totally correct. So right now my Linux machine is being deployed, but it could be in a whole architecture. And the beautiful thing about this template is that we take care of deploying the resources in the most efficient way. So if you're deploying more than one machine, for example, we can deploy them in parallel. You don't have to think about that and things like that. So that was part of the demo I wanted to show about how to deploy stuff mm-hmm. to Azure and how you could deploy your game services architecture. And in this demo, I only showed you how to deploy the infrastructure, the platform. But you can also use the same thing to deploy your code. So you could have it download code and actually have a full solution up and running. So we're coming to an end here. So there's a landing page for Azure and gaming. So if you have gaming workloads running that, or you want to develop game workloads on Azure, there's a landing page on http://azure.com/gaming. And please go there and find more information about the use cases we have, and also some more information about how to develop your solutions on Azure.
So I think like wrapping up the whole session, we started off with first, what is the gaming industry? Then second of all, I think we started talking about Azure in general. What is Azure? Why should a game developer bother about Azure in general? Then I think you covered a couple of typical architecture patterns seen in gaming studios. And then you shot some pretty neat demos.
Thank you.
And I think so isn't there like one last thing that okay.
That's about it, I think.
Okay, well, thank you. And tune in for the next few sessions.
Thank you very much.